What is up, my marvelous monster members? That means two things. On this episode of the Warp Reality Podcast, we talk with Bronxville Paranormal Society members Al Santarica and Brian Bowden about all things paranormal. Edgegrave Dave gives us his review on the movie Smile. And Chris Whitehouse talks to us about the Estes Method. You don't want to miss this one, so let's go!
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 25 of the Warped Reality Podcast. I'm your host, Ghost Joe. I have an amazing show for you guys tonight, as I'll be playing an interview I had with, I'm going to say it, paranormal experts, Al Santarica and Brian Bowden. They are extremely well-versed on many different aspects of the paranormal, from ghosts and aliens to cryptids, and they definitely know how to keep you on the edge of your seat with their words. But first things first, we are now officially in the holiday season, and with that, you will be thinking of some gifts to get for people. I definitely have a great recommendation, but first, we are going to get right into the show and start off with Chris Whitehouse of the White House Investigation Team talking a little bit about the Estes Method.
Hello, today I want to talk about Estes Method. Now, I think it originated, certainly in the things that I saw, where you'd take a medium and basically sensory deprive them by putting blindfolds on and noise-cancelling headphones. And then you would go to another room and ask questions into the haunted location and make note of what you recorded the medium saying at that time. And hopefully, whatever she was witnessing or feeling corresponded with what you were asking for, such as touch their head or show them an image. And because not everyone has a medium in their team and around at the time, people started to use the Necrophonic app, which gives out garbled dialogue of various types, mixed up, reversed, fast, slow, and that person can then just repeat what they interpret the noises to be saying. Meanwhile, the team are asking out into the location. So whereas one doesn't use an app, one does use an app, the same kind of effect is given. And yeah, as I've touched on before, we've had some really interesting experiments with that, and we hope to continue doing that. So for it to work, a spirit would have to interact with the app itself, and I guess either choose the phrases that were being put forward or speak their voice into the app and through the headphones. It does seem like a stretch when you say it out loud. However, experiments will show one way or the other whether we're fooling ourselves or not. And my mindset at the moment is that it's not, because I will ask questions, as I've said before, like name a colour, and pretty soon after you'll get a brown or whatever, which is a weird word to come through the Necrophonic app if you've ever heard it in real time. A lot of it's very dark and creepy. So brown isn't a particularly scary word, is it? But I think any method where you've got one person with headphones on, even if it was using automatic writing, that would still be a spirit flowing through one person while the others in another room prompted the spirit what to communicate, similar to remote viewing and methods where the group are split. I think if we can separate the team from the spirit, that really piques my interest. And if we can remotely communicate with something we can't see that gives legible answers to questions that are pointed, then hopefully that correspondence will be fascinating. You know, if I say, tell me how you are, and it said, very good, thanks, in a completely different room, you know, you'd have to be interested at how that's working. Now, one time when Lucy was the one having Necrophonic into her ears, and they were on a top level, a mezzanine, at my workplace, and we were all far away down on a lower level, and we used a baby monitor so that Lucy could speak out, and the microphone baby monitor would beam the noise down through the speaker end. So it was a one-way system from Lucy to us. She couldn't hear what we were asking. And we were seemingly talking to the spirit, saying it was going to touch Lucy. And so we said, have you touched her yet? And then Lucy goes, no. And then we said, well, can you do it then? now, and we hear a shuffling in the building, and then it starts to come through the baby monitor because Lucy's microphone is picking it up, and we say, touch her back, and Lucy just freaks out at this moment and is shouting down, you know, against the noise coming to her ears, something just touched me on the back. And we were all so excited. And she actually thought one of us had come up behind her and was trying to rile her from the experiment and say, come on, take your headphones off. You know, we're going to do this now. So, yes, that delayed communication, if you like, being also almost instantaneous, getting the answers that you're wanting, is a really good way to prove of ghosts' existence, I would say. And hopefully we'll have more interesting things to come. So if you have any stories of using Estes Method yourself, please get in touch with the podcast. Well, that's all for now, and thank you very much. Back to the podcast.
So thank you so much, Chris, for that great segment. So as I said, I have a great gift idea for your family and friends. Our very own Chris Whitehouse has recently published his first book called Into the Darkness, Becoming a Ghost Hunter. It details Chris's journey into his exploration for proving and disproving the paranormal. He talks about his experiences while investigating using scientific tools as well as spiritual ones. Chris is an amazing storyteller, and as you could hear from his segments, he seems to know a thing or two about this stuff. I recently purchased my copy, and I can't wait to read it. It's available on Amazon in Kindle format, as well as paperback, which is only $6.99. So that's a freaking bargain, if you ask me. I'll put the link in the show notes, along with the links to all of his various socials as usual. So check it out and buy the book for someone special. They will thank you for it. So guys, before we get into this next segment, I just wanted to let you know, I just started a monthly segment on the Paranoia Radio podcast, where I drop some spooky stuff all over that show. My debut was on the November 24th show entitled Giants. I'll be releasing the segments myself as well, but I encourage you to please check out the Paranoia Radio podcast with hosts Treble Garcia and Big Tank. They are very great hosts. Very great. They're awesome hosts, and they bring conspiracy theory facts to you in a very, very entertaining way. There will be a link in the show notes as well. Please check it out. It's awesome. Let's get on to the next segment. So now let's get right into Edgegrave Dave's horrible review of the movie Smile. Edgegrave Dave, I'm ready when you are.
Hey, what's up, fellow grave diggers? This is Edgegrave Dave with another horrible review. One could say that I'm literally smiling from ear to ear. The reason why I'm saying that is, at the time of this recording, whenever this comes out, I have just finished the movie Smile, which has only been in theaters at this point. And my, what a campaign that this movie has had. You know, one of the things that isn't really talked about a lot, especially nowadays, is different types of advertising, as so many things are on the internet, social media, everything like that. And we actually have had people smiling at sporting events, just standing up and just randomly smiling at like a Yankees game. I mean, just imagine that you're going out with your family and you're just kind of hanging out, or you know, there could be like small children, or, and then there it is. There's actually just random people just standing up with the creepiest smile that you've ever seen from ear to ear. I love it. It's one of the most original concepts that I think I've seen. And it's been on TikTok, and people have, you know, on Twitter and YouTube played little videos of this. People just shocked that, why are they doing this? What's going on here? And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what brings us into the hype for this movie, Smile. So, Smile was written and directed by Parker Finn, starring Sosie Bacon, Kevin Bacon's daughter. And I just always have to say this. I still remember him from Friday the 13th, one of my favorite franchises ever. Jesse T. Usher Jr., Kyle Gowner, Caitlin Jean Stacy, and the music in this movie was created by Cristobal Tapia de Vere, and I truly hope that I'm saying that right. He actually, I learned, did the score for The White Lotus, which was an awesome HBO Max series that I actually did catch, and I'm excited to see the next one of that one as well. So, coming out of the theater for this one, smile up, up, there is a spoiler alert. I have not said anything about the movie that shall reveal any information till this time. So, there's just so many different emotions for this one. Coming out of the movie is just one of those, like, I've just been through a ride, you know. You have the main character is a doctor that works with mental patients, and one of the first things that happens is there's a patient that comes in, she's seeing something, but she just knows that she's gonna die, that her time is up. And she just so out of nowhere just kills herself. And when this happens, I mean, it's very horrific and unexpected. It's like this evil entity is passed on to the main character. And then she's just seeing it throughout the whole movie and trying to figure out what is happening to her. All these unfortunate events and violent visions and all different things start happening to her. And there's a whole kind of theme in the movie about her past. And you keep seeing an image of a woman that you later find out is, I don't want to give it all away, something happened with her mother. And this is a very key element to what happens in the storytelling here. But there's a lot of elements here of, you know, I kind of get a feeling of a lot of the 2010s decade of horror where, you know, also things that go back to movies like The Ring and Japanese horror, but I kind of have that, like, The Conjuring kind of feeling, there's some paranormal activity feeling that I'm kind of sensing here, even though it's not really, like, that kind of thing exactly, but, you know, there's, like, elements in there. It just has that certain darkness to it, that, like, overall feel to it. There were, you know, some scenes that actually really, really gave me some, like, jump scares, like, actually, you know, where, you know, I don't really want to say, like, not for the weak of heart, but definitely if you're watching this with somebody that isn't necessarily, like, into horror, just expect your arm to be broken off by them grabbing onto you. Because this movie does an excellent job at subtle horror, graphical horror, of blending reality with imagination, with craziness. You have a doctor that's seeing mental patients, as I mentioned, right? And after a while, she seems to everybody else like she is a mental patient, like her life is unraveling. And this is a very common theme in a lot of different subgenres of horror. It kind of reminds me, in a way, of The Candyman, when Helen is going crazy. It sort of has that feeling to me, even though it's very different, of Kirsten in Hellraiser. I even see a little bit of, even though it doesn't have an 80s feel by any means, of a little bit of Nightmare on Elm Street with Freddy. You know, everybody thinks that Nancy is crazy, what's going on, her grip on reality. But that feeling sort of never gets old of, I know I'm going to die. And when you just see random characters or people that you've seen, you know, just in conversation in the movie, like random characters just grinning from ear to ear, you know that something's going down. And the mystery of it all is also a really nice touch without really ever giving too much away, you know. So I would say go and see it. I give this movie a 4 out of 5 graves, and I do believe that you might be grinning or smiling from ear to ear after you see this movie, because it is a job well done. I also do want to take this time to mention that the director of this movie did thank the audience before it started and made it a point of how coming to the theaters to see this movie really made him happy and really made all of his hard work pay off. I do actually take about as many opportunities as I can to see movies theatrically, if at all possible. But as a working dad with two kids, you know, can't always do that. But I wanted to make it a point, especially, I'm not sure when this is coming out. We are still in the spooky season at this time. So it's a great way to keep celebrating. All right, now back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thank you so much for your review, my friend. I really enjoyed the movie as well. I felt like it ticked a lot of the horror boxes that I really love to see. It definitely had the creepy factor going for it. It was suspenseful, and the acting was decent as well. So I was really, really happy with watching the movie. It definitely made me smile. Anyway, if you guys have a paranormal experience that you would like to share, questions, comments, or you just want to say F you, you could give me a call at 845-600-0744 and let me know. You could also email me at ghostjoeny, that's ghostjoeny is in New York, at gmail.com. And let me know your experiences. I'd love to hear them. I'd love to put them on the air. So this next interview was my first double interview. But although many times these two gentlemen come in a pair, they both have extensive individual resumes in the paranormal arts. To say that these guys are overachievers in this field would be a gross understatement. Al Santariga has been in investigating and researching many aspects of the paranormal for over 50 years. He has had many cryptid encounters, as well as ghostly and UFO sightings. He has spoken at numerous lectures and events of the aforementioned categories, along with being a paranormal investigator, cryptozoologist, intuitive, and being featured on a half a dozen TV appearances. He is the founder of the Bronxville Paranormal Society and director of the New York State UFO Project, Sasquatch Organization, and Dogman Project. Brian Bowden started in a similar way as many, witnessing his first paranormal occurrences at a young age, thereby fueling his interest in the unknown. He has a professional background in finance, working with such companies as the International Monetary Fund and top-tier brokerage dealers. Like Al, he has been featured on many TV shows, magazine articles, and top-tier podcasts. Well, way to lower your bar on this podcast, sir. He is the North American correspondent for Outer Limits magazine. He was one of the first recruits to join the Bronxville Paranormal Society, as well as founded the New York State UFO Project. He is also a remote viewer and is a current member of the International Remote Viewers Association. So, although he may have relocated from New York to Florida, he is still assisting in research and investigations in the New York area. Phew. I told you these guys had been around. To be honest, even though the full interview was over 90 minutes long, I still feel like I have not scratched the surface with these two gentlemen. Without further ado, here's the interview. All right, so I think we should get started here because you guys have extensive paranormal resumes. So we definitely got a lot to talk about and touch on.
Well, yeah, we've been doing it a long time. Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so let's get started with you, Al. Is there a crazy experience, or what was the first, if you don't mind sharing, what was the first experience that you had that got you interested in this crazy field of the paranormal?
Yeah, when I was 5 years old, my grandmother, who just had passed, came to me every night for a week straight, full body apparition, and I was sleeping in her bed. I took over her room when she passed, you know, and every night she came to me for like a week straight and tucked me in, you know, and, you know, talking to my father who didn't believe in ghosts, you know, and my mother who was sensitive. She was like, I understand. Don't worry. It's just your grandmother, you know? And I was like, I wasn't scared because, you know, with my grandmother, she's talking to me in Italian, you know what I mean? I know we just buried her, but she's standing on the side of the bed, tucking me in, kissing me on my head. What am I going to do? So that's how it's, you know, that's how it started, you know.
Now, it also said, you had also said that you were an in,
an intuitive. What exactly, what does that mean? Like, what exactly is that?
The longer you're in this field, the more sensitive you get to different energies, okay? And in the beginning, growing up as a kid, I would always get gut feelings. Like, I would say, okay, you know what? We got to leave here now, because if we don't, something bad's going to happen. And we'd leave, and a major fight would break out. Like, if we're in a club in the city or something, you know what I mean? And just all that. And I was, and I didn't, you know, I didn't know what the hell it was. I knew my mother was a sensitive. My brother is a parapsychologist. He was like one of the first in the United States, but I didn't know what it was. It just, I always called it gut feeling. Like, I got a gut feeling. I got to go. I got to do this. And then I started, once I got into this field, I started meeting people who were psychics, you know, and rec game masters. And I started talking to these people and as I'm talking to them, they're looking at me and they're smiling. They're like, you know, you're an intuitive, you know? And I was like, okay. I didn't even know what it meant. I was like, well, I don't know what that's. One lady, I shook her hand and she said she got like electrocuted. And she's like, oh my God. She goes, you know, you're an intuitive, right? And I was like, yeah, somebody's already told me. So, you know, when you have like these world renowned psychics telling you this, right? And you're getting it from not only the psychics, but you're getting it from rec game masters and other people who are sensitive to energies, different kind of energies, are all telling you you're sensitive to different kind of energies. You know, I say, okay, I'm an intuitive. Okay, I still, to this day and age, I don't claim to be psychic by any stretch of the imagination, but I do have, I can feel energy when I, like I said, the longer you're in the field and the more energies you run across, the more sensitive you get to stuff. You know what I mean? Where before it was a gut feeling, sometimes different energies affect me differently. Sometimes it's my stomach. I feel like a nauseous in my stomach. Sometimes my fingers start tingling. Sometimes I get a metallic taste in my mouth. Sometimes I get a pressure in my head. Depending on what kind of investigation we're doing, what kind of energy we're dealing with, this is how I've evolved over the years as being sensitive to energies. You know what I mean? And it all started with, oh, I got a gut feeling, you know? And that's just the way it all started. Like I said, the longer you're in this field, the more sensitive you get to different kinds of energies.
And how about you, Brian? What got you into all this crazy stuff?
Being younger than Al, how to say that? I've got about 45 years of experience under my belt. For me, it started with a huge interest in science, planets, UFOs, the In Search Of program with Leonard Nimoy, where you'd have the cryptids and you'd have the ghosts and everything like that. And I've always, you know, I got lucky because I'm born and raised in the Bronx. My mother was a teacher, so she was a director or girl side head up in a sleepaway camp. So I spent my summers where I could actually see the stars, and I've seen a couple objects up there. Something that Al and I, we only found out this after, like, you know, we met through a mutual group that was like meeting up, talking about this type of stuff in Yonkers. And something I used to do all the time, no matter how old I was I'd be in a room or a place and I'd focus on somebody and say, turn around. In my mind, turn around, you know, and using my mind to send a thought to them for them to turn around. And then a lot of times you get you'll get somebody like kind of creeped out and they're looking behind you and it's the person you're talking about. And I believe Al, we mentioned that we used to play this game because it was bored. You get up bored on the bus, you're traveling from New York City into back up the Westchester or the Bronx, right? So, I've also always had this feeling, and I can't describe it. I used to look up and say, I belong up there. I don't know why or how, but I belong up there. I never was one that was seeking any type of abilities, but, it always crossed your mind, you know, could there be, maybe, whatever, because I know that everybody has the potential for it. And we did an investigation for Bronxville Paranormal Society, which Al founded, and I'm one of the first few members in there. And because Al's never worked with any of us before, he also invited a bunch of other people. We always do this for all our work. He had the psychic for our group read everybody to make sure they were okay to come and go on the investigation, because it's not a joke. We got to depend on each other. I mean, like when Al and I go out, and frankly, I really don't, unless I've been out with you a couple of times, I need to know that you have my back and he has my back. You know what I'm saying? I can get yours, you can get mine. And we need to know that people that are coming are not susceptible for possession or jumping or an issue. We don't want that responsibility. So they read them. And we did this investigation in Thales, New York, Letchworth Village. And then afterwards, we're big guys. We like to go out, get some coffee or, you know, something to eat after the investigation. And we kind of exchange notes and see where we're spot on. And, you know, if we were right about X or Y or Z, and get something to eat. And Al revealed to all of us that he had everybody, you know, checked out. And I'm kind of paraphrasing. So he went around to all these other people. Yep. She said, you're okay. You're okay. You're okay. Now, our psychic, Cindy, when you have some kind of like you're open to paranormal or abilities or that whole area of raising your vibration, she gets a tingle. So one of the guys that was with us said, oh, she tingled when you were there, which means you're more open to it. And then I remember Al saying, and then she got to you and she fell off her chair. And she said that I have abilities and the problem is I keep walls up, to which I responded, damn straight I do. I live in New York City. You know, I keep a club on my car. But through Al, I said, look, contact Cindy and see if it's okay if I can contact her, because I'd like to explore this. And she was more than welcome. You know, she welcomed it. She is like a sister to me. I love that woman to death. Hope she is well. I send her blessings. And I didn't want to open a Pandora's box, but little did I know. I didn't open a Pandora's box. I opened up a fucking duffel bag. You know, I mean, it was. So I started, and what I did and what I was able to do first is, you know, ground myself. But I call myself a remote viewer. Cindy calls me a psychic. I know another psychic named Carl Petrie, who's very good friends with Rosemary Ellen Guiley's brother of mine. And he says I'm a remote viewer. But then, like Al said, you talk to some of these other psychics around there, you know, some really big time people that are 100% legit. And they tell you, you're not only a psychic, you have multiple gifts. You really need to do things, do readings. Especially one psychic was Katie Turner. And if you really want to talk to somebody great, she's out of Canada. Al will validate. If you can get her on, we could probably create a message for you.
Oh, my God.
Introduce you to Katie and ask. I mean, I think she'll be more than happy to come on. She's the real deal. And she's the one that really said, you need to do a reading. And I've dabbled in it a bit. I used my go-to when I come up with something crazy that I experience or I have a sight or a vision, I go to Al and I say, Al, this is what I, and he's like, wow, okay, yeah. And I go, all right, it's a little bit crazy, but do you think I should tell this person? And Al's like, yeah, sure, go ahead. Because it's not Al that's telling them, it's me that's telling them. So I was like, yeah, they're not going to think I'm crazy, but they'll think you are, you know?
No. Look, Brian has, there's been a couple of investigations that we've gone where Brian could make it because of family issues and stuff like that. And he's remote viewed these locations while we were there on site, and spot on. Every single time he did it is spot on. And you know, like he didn't know where we were. He knew where the park we were in, but he didn't know where in that park. The park is like, you know, 15,000 acres, you know what I mean? And he seen right down to the spot where we were at. And I tell you what, he's impressed me more than one time. He's blown me away with his remote viewing, you know what I mean? And Cindy did say Brian was very talented wise, but he did have a lot of walls holes up.
Right. And you have to in this business, whether it's ghost hunting, UFO investigation, cryptids, whatever, you have to learn to protect yourself. And that's what Al and I do all the time. Before any investigation, we go through this whole protection ritual with prayers and sage. So, you know, you can understand why I would be a little bit, you know, cautious, but also I don't want to come off as a fraud. There's too many of those people in this world. And, you know, what Al and I, we literally are brothers. I'm thankful every day, and I'm sure he is, that we've met. I drive him crazy. He drives me nuts. It's a brotherhood, Joe. Brotherhood. But you know, I'm like, here's what I think. This is what I'm seeing. You know, what do you think? And we talk about this. I mean, we always said, Al and I always said, if we could record our conversations, we'd probably have 1,000 episodes easy, and everybody would want to listen to them because there's a lot of good stuff in there, you know?
And it works the same for me. When I see stuff that, you know, my mind can't comprehend what my eyes are seeing, because I have a tendency to see some crazy stuff, I go to Brian, and he's my go-to guy. And I say, what do you think? And my nuts, and he would say, nope, you got to go back. You got to do this. You got to research that. You got to go, you got to take measurements, and, you know, and he'll say, and I'll say, no, I don't have to do all that stuff because I know what this area is. And he'll say, no, you'll have to go. You have to do it. And then when I go and I do it, you know, because he kind of kicks me in the ass to do it, I find out all this information that I thought I knew. I thought I knew the area like the back of my hand, and I was so wrong. I find out so much stuff by going back and actually doing an investigation and researching the area. And but we do this all the time. We bounce stuff off each other all the time, every single day. You know, anytime there's something strange going on.
And it's funny, when Al and I go and we do something, either an investigation or a preliminary investigation. We did one up in Pine Bush. There's an old doctor's house, which you probably saw there in town. I don't know if they knocked that down. I don't remember if they did or not.
No, they didn't knock it down. No, it's just been whatchamacallit, condemned.
Condemned. Yeah. So we went into this place. We got the permission from the owner. We did we did this after appearing at Pine Bush, talking for hours there, a very long day. But prior to that day, Pine Bush, we were up there like a day or so before, and we wanted to get some base readings. And both Al and I, we purposely go our separate ways. And I don't know what it is about both of us together, but I don't know if we scare the hell out of these things, whatever. They don't want to come near us for the most part. I don't know if it's a fear thing or when you have a dog and then you're trying to say, sit. But when the dog trainer comes, the dog could smell like, oh, that's an alpha. And the dog just sits. It's a similar situation, but we love it because it, you know, like, oh, what happened? Hey, when you went down to the elevator, what happened? And you're like, oh, I got to chill. I'm like, yep, right by the back, right? It's by the back. You know, we can validate. And that's great evidence right there. You know, feelings are part of the evidence train, whether you like it or not. It's, you know, you have these abilities, and he's been going through, you know, we both have been going through what we classify almost as an ascension, where we're moving up and up and up vibration wise. And this is why we have so much success with, you know, both together and individually.
You mentioned the Bronxville Paranormal Society. Al, how did you, when did you form that?
I'm thinking it's gotta be about 10 years ago. I was going through an issue seeing UFOs every single night, right? I'm going to work at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's dark. I'm seeing UFOs. Coming home, I'm seeing UFOs. And I'm not the type of guy that thinks every light in the sky is a UFO. Again, I got to get a gut feeling that says, look at me. This is, you know, important. So my brother, being a parapsychologist, I called him up and I said, Frank, I think I'm losing my mind. Every time I get in a damn car, there's a craft above my car, yada, yada, yada. So he said, well, you know, there's a group in Yonkers that meets. Why don't you go? And so I went to this group called the UFO Roundtable. And I met everybody there. That's where I met Brian. And then my brother said, you know, I was going out with a bunch of guys from work. I work in the town called Bronxville. okay? And we would go out on all kinds of investigation, ancient stone chamber stuff, haunted house stuff, just all kinds of stuff we would go out. And it was like maybe four or five of us. So we were at ancient stone chamber one time doing an investigation, and a family came up and the kid said, "Are you guys a paranormal team?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "What's your name?" I go, "The Bronxville Paranormal Society," just because everybody I was with worked in Bronxville. And it just came out. It came out so natural. And then I was like, and then my brother said, "Yeah, it's a good name, BPS. You should go with that, you know?" He says, "But instead of using the guys at work, you're already hanging out with all these guys at this UFO meeting. You should put a team together with those guys. You know these guys. You know who you could work with, who you can't work with." And Brian, of course, Brian was my first choice. And because me and Brian, we just clicked from day one. And he was my first choice. And then I said, "Well, I was like, who do you think, who else do you think we should?" And he was like, "Oh, I think we should get that guy and maybe that guy and yada, yada, yada." And we put a team together, and then we started going out as the BPS team. Officially, with made up the shirts and the cards and the whole nine yards. And we've been doing all kinds of stuff ever since. And what we did was to alleviate a lot of negative energy. And I'll call it energy. When we were going, we were getting invited to all kinds of symposiums, And we got up to Pine Bush, and the people at Pine, we're talking, and the people and all the ghosts and all the UFO people, and the ufologists are saying, why is there a paranormal team here talking? This is a UFO thing. And then you go to a UFO thing and they want to know why there's a Bigfoot team. So what we did was we just branched out to the New York State UFO Project and the New York State Sasquatch Organization. And now we have a banner for every time we get invited to the symposium, and we don't have to deal with any negativity aimed towards us. You know what I mean? Because these people, they see the Bigfoot banner or the UFO banner or the BPS banner and say, okay, they're ghost hunters or they're cryptids or they're ufologists and stuff like that. So that's why we branched off to all these other groups. But BPS did everything anyway, because the group that we were going to, everybody was experiencing all kinds. It was called the round table, UFO round table, but everybody was experiencing all kinds of paranormal stuff there. You know what I mean? So
there's so much going on, but through our investigation, over a decade we've been doing this, we've pretty much come very close. We're not going to say we have it, but we've found almost the Rosetta Stone, the unifier from all the fields and how they do overlap into each other. And we're not talking like Bigfoot is the pets of UFO aliens. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying there is a certain connection or element that's placed, between these different type of experiences that can be found in each one of them. So that's like a common thread there. And yeah, we've been able to, that took a lot of research and a lot of years to kind of whittle it down, because I will tell you, for example, until I had a specific Bigfoot encounter, cryptid, I always thought Bigfoot was flesh and blood, Gigantopithecus. But when we had this investigation encounter in 2015 or 2012, 2015, whatever it was.
2015, yeah.
We were so deep in the woods in upstate New York. I mean, it was pitch black. And you couldn't just leave. To the right of us was a goat trail, as Al called it. You would get killed. There was branches and rocks and ledges.
Yeah, it was just
no
rocky,
way.
Yeah.
And to the left of us was a pathway. It's part of the Appalachian Trail, but still it's pitch black. So the only other alternative is to jump in the lake that's there. We're not, it's probably polluted. And we had a creature that whooped us. It went whoop, whoop within feet from us, that you could feel it in your chest.
No, it said three whoops, one louder than the other. It was unbelievable.
But the third whoop, I it was at the other end of the lake, which is about 2 miles away from us.
More than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy 3 miles.
Right. Sure. So in a split second, and I studied physics and I studied astronomy. I thought about going into it, or as Al would call me, an asshole physicist. I'm an asshole physicist. But the only way you can do that is if you can create a portal, jump into it, and then pop out. It's quantitative. And from that point forward, and I've been on this path until something changes, and it hasn't, that this creature, Bigfoot, can be both physical, flesh and blood, as well as interdimensional, and then molecular. So transferring energy to get to each stage. And it's, you know, once you have this experience and you see it, I really do think people would be like, oh my God, you're right. You're right about this. This isn't just a normal flesh and blood creature. There's more to it. So
let me ask you this about Bigfoot. Is he as blurry in person as he is in everybody else's pictures?
No, not at all.
No, he's not. He and she is not. No, there's some very clear images. I think it was Shane Carpenter. If that's the guy's name. I forgot. He was taking stuff out of Canada, which is great video. There's some, you know, this interaction was 100% spot. You knew you were dealing with this large bipedal cryptid, even in the dark. But Al's had personal experiences, and I've had personal experience with this creature. And literally, Al was no more than, at that point, the hood of a car's length, you know, for the most part, from this. And my experience, my first ever experience in Connecticut, I was literally 3 inches away from this creature.
So, I mean, you guys had touched on it before about the Bigfoot and, you know, people saying that they were interdimensional or aliens pets or alien scouts or, I mean, what have you guys come up with, or what do you guys believe that Bigfoot really is?
So, Joe, to answer your question, and I've seen these creatures multiple times. I've even seen a white one. When you see them up close and personal, your brain cannot comprehend what your eyes are seeing. They're so big. That it's just enormous, and you just can't comprehend what you're seeing. Your brain just like wants to shut off. I would call them a being. I would call it some kind of being. Native Americans believe they're people. You know, an older race. Definitely some. Maybe an older race of beings, human beings. Look, our we've changed our minds a million times over the last, you know, 10 years, you know what I mean? But we've come to the conclusion that in the beginning we always said that all of these things are separate, you know. But now we totally believe that that we had our ascensions and everything. We totally believe that everything is connected. Everything is connected. They're all connected through certain kinds of things that can, and just, you know, I think there are people. I really do think they're an older race of beings. And, you know, I don't know, Brian, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like I said, I've changed my philosophy on it because in my thought pattern, and I think they are some form of entity, may have human relations to it somehow DNA wise, may not. I don't believe they're any other species but their own type of species. And I believe that their abilities to do these things are innate, just like if Yeah, how could you just, you can't describe somebody how you breathe. You just breathe. You've been breathing since the beginning when they smacked your ass coming out, you know, just like an octopus can do what it can do. So I don't think there's anything paranormal there. It's just that we don't have these things to study on a public level. So I think they've been around for a while, for many, many years, along with other creatures that travel and possibly through multiple timelines besides dimensions. So they can go into different timelines and come back out. And they're, you know, for the most part, I'm not saying they're the friendliest thing in the world. I mean, it's a giant, basically, it looks like a giant gorilla, you know, or and we know what those things can do to you. You know, this thing is huge, massive powerhouse. What its intentions are, why it's here, we haven't found that out. But when Al said we changed our minds, it's always because there's been new evidence presented to afford us to say, what if this or this, and work on a new theory or hypothesis. So,
right. Now, you know, sticking with the whole cryptids thing, you guys had mentioned Dogman. Now, I never actually got into, but I've had paranormal experiences as far as ghosts and hauntings since I was a kid. I've always been fascinated with aliens and UFOs, but I never actually saw a UFO. I've only been living upstate for 3 years. So,
oh, you will.
You know, fingers are crossed. You know, I'm going to be the first one to get a good picture. You know, I promise. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
I've got a kick ass video.
There's a lot of good pictures,
yeah?
Joe. A lot of good pictures. Yeah. Real pictures, not photoshopped crap that you see on YouTube. There's a lot of people, especially up here in the Hudson Valley, that have tons of photographs.
My thing nowadays is that I feel like, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, something like that would get you on the news, something, but I feel like you're not even getting 15 minutes of fame anymore from it. So I don't feel that a lot of people are really even like doctoring things anymore. I know it's super easy to do it, especially nowadays, but I feel like, you know, I don't.
Oh, I believe
it's almost a waste of time, I think, to kind of doctor things.
I believe it's the opposite, because I believe people are doctoring things up, are putting out CGI based products for whatever, you know, gets them off for a second. They're like, oh, I did that, you know. And the problem we have in this field is when you present real evidence, I guarantee you'll get a dozen people go, oh, that's Photoshop. And when it's not Photoshop, I mean, the stuff that's coming out now, the blob squatches, the blob creatures, like 15 of them in a tree watching somebody, I'm like, it's physically impossible. These creatures are seriously 6 to 12 feet tall. I mean, I'm not exaggerating, maybe taller, some of them. And you're going to tell me that there's a dozen of them in a tree. How big was the tree? You know, it just, but there are other people that aren't, you know, there's no point. I don't think people need to be convinced there's aliens in the world. Okay. Or there's craft. You see something that's odd, you say, that's odd. And anything that you can't identify is technically an unidentified flying object. But once you start having an abduction experience, everything changes. You don't want to talk about with too many people. You don't want the fame. You don't want any of that stuff. Even that 2 seconds of notoriety, you know, I'm sure even Whitley Strieber is very much struggling with the fact that he released what he released in his, you know, his experience.
And I'll tell you what, Joe, you don't think people or Photoshop and stuff anymore. Question everything that comes out of Mexico and South America. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Although James Fox is doing a pretty good job. He's doing a lot of good stuff South America-wise. He's a legit kind of investigator. He has a movie coming out, actually. But yeah, I'm with Al on that. Whenever I get something in like South America, Mexico, South America, I'm like, yeah, okay. How many pesos did we get for this one? We did an investigation, day night investigation up in New York State. I told you where we had that Bigfoot sighting. That was only a part of it. Another part after that investigation, that end was over. We were going to another location and we had a craft appear. I mean, it was came right at us. Al at the time, because Al's had his own experiences and we were basically new to the, he didn't want us to be in any danger. He's like, don't let him get abducted, he's saying to himself, right? I videotaped that craft for, I think it was 30-something seconds. And I never would have put that camera down, but for some reason, it's only 30 seconds. I had unlimited tape in there to go to town with that video. And we also experienced missing time at that point, okay? Once you get abducted, you got two choices. You could actually feel like you had missing time. You could go investigate it, but you may not be able to sleep well ever again. Or you could just leave it be and move on with your life. And sometimes, after a series of abductions for these, people that have been abducted, once they, relax a little bit more per the abductions, and they open up and they realize that, I don't want to say you're special, you're being taken against your will, but they feel you can handle a little bit better, then they're enlightened more. So you'll come back with some information, you'll start drawing some crazy stuff. You'll start writing math equations. Some people have experienced that. Or you'll be 3 years old and tell your mother that she's a nice person, but she's not your real mother.
Or they'll tell their friends and their friends will come and get you. And then the next thing you know, you're being abducted by 10 different alien races. So they're species.
So
yeah,
this actually wasn't one of my questions, but since we're on the subject of aliens and stuff, what do you guys think of the Men in Black? Do you think that they're aliens that are just trying to like tell people like, listen, you didn't see anything? Or do you think they're government guys? What's your thought on the Men in Black?
I know people claim that the Men in Black acted weird, they looked weird, they were wearing old clothes and yada yada yada. And that may have been true in the past, but I'm not so sure anymore. I believe that the Men in Black are definitely, if not government officials, alien species working with the government. You know what I mean? I had a Men in Black experience, but it had nothing to do with aliens. It had to do with the Dogman experience and the two guys that pulled me over. We're not aliens, believe me. They were special ops. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But I know in the past they've said that they walked funny, they acted funny, yada, yada, yada. But I think if they've been here for millennia and I believe they're living among us, why would they not look as normal as a regular everyday person, you know what I mean? So I think if they're not real, just government people, special group from the government, black ops government group, then it's aliens working with the feds,
So we kind of got off on a tangent there because that's me, because you guys talk about a lot of different aspects, as we said. Let's get back to the Dogman thing, because like I had said before, I just started getting into the whole cryptid thing when I started doing the podcast, so I don't really know much about pretty much a lot of the cryptids. I'm learning, but I never really heard of the Dogman until recently. Can you guys enlighten me on the Dogman?
Okay. So I didn't want to believe this was real, but Al kept going, dude, you got to hear this, got to hear this, got to hear this. And I'm like, okay, come on, we've gone to the obscene. And then you have an experience with one, and then you start to talk to people that work for the government that tell you things that they do to protect bases and stuff about these creatures. And you're like, oh my God, this thing is real. Basically, what we're looking at is a lycan or a werewolf. And we're looking at, to this date, they claim to be 7 different variants. Ones that look a little bit more like a mentally challenged Bigfoot, all the way up to a soldier, which looks like the werewolf in Van Helsing, and may include the werewolf from America, Werewolf in London. But this is real. It's about 6, 7, 8 upwards, you know, in feet. Massive creature. And it's basically throughout the country. We do have them in New York State. We do have reports in lower ends of New York State, you know. And it's a cryptid that I've come with Al fairly close to, under 20 feet, would you say, Al? I mean, you know,
10 feet, yeah. 10 feet, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a weird, very weird experience. It wasn't violent, but it went to a certain point where I started getting my goose pimples. He's yelling at me to get in the car. He's going to leave me. And it was time to go. You, like Al said, there's a gut. You know it's time to go. But there are other incidents where these are very, very smart cryptids. They know what they're doing. For some reason, they get some kind of pleasure out of scaring the hell out of you or threatening you. And again, I believe like Bigfoot, Sasquatch, they have the abilities to go interdimensional. So they can go from flesh and blood into a different dimension. And some of them look like Anubis. So that's what we're talking about when they called the Dogman. I don't remember who gave them. It was Linda Godfrey, right? That
I'm not sure.
Linda Godfrey that the Beast of Bray Road was described as like a part man, part dog. So I think that she coined it Dogman.
Okay.
At that point, it's a creature you really don't want to meet. I'm going to be honest. You don't want to have a moment where you see this thing because, frankly, it's going to unnerve you to the point where you'll be living a bit in fear, especially if you just, you know, for example, you live the Mayopac, okay, or up in that Mayopac area. And it's a vast country there. You know, there's a lot of things in those woods that you would not want to meet in person. And we're not talking bears and mountain lions. So, yeah, that's what a dog.
Other than Dogman and Bigfoot, what other cryptids have you guys studied that, you know, are I don't want to say real, but that you've found some evidence of them being, you know, around? What other kind of cryptids?
Well, I seen a rake one time.
Get out of here.
I mean, we called them ghouls back in the day. I guess the kids call them rakes now. But that was a pretty eye-opening experience, you know, to see something like you never thought in your wildest imagination you would ever see, you know.
Yeah.
And to see it right there as plain as day is pretty creepy and pretty mind-blowing. As a matter of fact, that was another time I had to call Brian and say, dude, I just seen this, and he's like, you got to go back.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm on the way to work.
It's just mind-boggling. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, we've encountered Bigfoot. We've been bluff-charged by Dogman, and we were probably closer to the Dogman the night we got bluff-charged than the night you were actually urinating in front of him, because you were about 10 feet away that
probably
night. And the night we got bluff charged, it was probably closer to 5 on the other side of that wall. But
right,
I've seen a rake, and I also seen a thunderbird a couple of years ago over the Hudson River.
Yep.
And you know, so it's, you know, like as far as investigating stuff like that, I mean, you know, you can go back and research the area that you've seen them in. But it's like a once in a blue moon, you know, opportunity when you run across these things. They're not so common as like the Dogman or the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
The Bigfoot and the Dogman are here. They're in our woods. Right. No matter what woods you, if you have a Bigfoot in your woods, you have a Dogman in those woods. There's no doubt in my mind about it.
Yeah, vice versa.
But these other creatures that, you know, that are all coming in and out of our dimension, I think it's just by chance running into them, you know?
Right.
I mean, a lot of times it is by chance. I'll tell you what. We went up to a place. What the heck is the name of the mountain with the fire towers up there? Ninna Mountain. During the COVID, my wife and my two kids, kids wanted, you know, let's get out, let's do something. So I said, hey, let's go to the stone chambers. They've never been there. We go up there and it was like kind of sun was setting for a bit. So it was, we kind of caught it at the tail end. And as we're going up there, my youngest, I brought my camera, a big camera, and I took a picture. I said, hey, you know, turn around. And she poses and she gave a pose. And I see this thing that's on her hands that are in front of her. Okay. The way the sun was setting and where my camera was, there was no reflection off of it. And it was
a fairy. That was really pretty crazy.
The best way I can describe it, there was a golden fairy on my youngest child's hand.
That's amazing.
And she never saw it at that point. But through investigations, on investigations, I've seen things that Al hasn't seen, and Al's seen things that I haven't seen. So we've both seen
gnomes.
Yeah.
Like woodland creatures. I've seen brownies before, like literally like what you would see in Harry Potter, like Dobie. I've seen large hooded figures that are, they're not the watchers in the religious sense, but they are kind of like the elemental keepers, or they just make sure there's a balance there. So there's it's a variety of different things. There are things I'd love to see, which I hope would exist, but you know, only time will tell.
Right.
You know, I've seen things. I've been sitting in a place room, and I catch this flash, like remember the old camera flashes out of my right corner eye. I look down and my hand to God, about 2 feet off the ground, this little hole opens up and I see something peek out and then I peek back in. I'm like, what the hell was that? You know?
I'm vouch for Brian right now.
No, I don't drink and I don't do drugs. And I'm just like, and I'm sitting there and then I tell him and we joke around with each other. Okay, I'm a dad. I'm like, no, seriously. I can't, you know what? I don't get off on drinking anymore and I have kids, so I have to be responsible. Sure. God forbid it's an emergency. I got to be able to take them someplace, even that, you know, even if my wife can't. So this thing opening up a little portal and doing, I mean, we've seen things. We've not only seen things with our eyes, but you can smell it. You can taste it. Like Al was saying, it tastes metallic. There's multiple variables here and each one of these leads to something else. It's not an everyday thing. It's like hitting the lottery a lot of times, and we don't get paid for it, but the knowledge we gain and experience is amazing.
Experience itself is mind-blowing. To think, to go back and think about, you know, when you go back and you think about what you've just experienced, and to know, you know, you're with other people that can validate what you've seen as well, you know. It's not just you. It's me. It's him. It's another guy. There's five of us. Whatever. It's the validation is what makes it all real. You know what I mean? I wasn't there by myself. Yeah. You know, and to see, like Brian said, we've seen these orbs of light that the Native Americans. I mean, our psychics call them fairies, but the Native Americans call them, you know, spirit balls, spirit lights, ghost lights, or whatever. We've seen them, you know, and to see an orb come out of a wall, stop in front of you, look at you like, oh shit, he's right here, and then take off down a hallway, make a right through someone's kitchen, and then a left out their back door to their deck. It's mind-boggling because you know, you're something is dodging you. And you're looking for it, and you're looking for it, and you're and your intuition is pulling you over to a location where this thing actually is, but you can't see. And then all of a sudden, when I tell you the day that orb came out of the wall, okay, I had my camera in my hand. My finger was on the trigger, and I was so blown away by seeing this ball of light in front of me. And I'm telling you, the energy I got off was like, oh shit, he's right here. And what we were chasing, yeah, according to the psychic, was elementals, I think she said that day, right, Bri?
Yeah, he said an elemental.
It went out, and I never pressed the button to take the picture because
that happened.
You
all
don't
the time.
Expect to see this stuff up close and personal, and when it happens, it's just mind blowing, and you have to train yourself. Okay, now take the picture. You know, I was watching, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but Jay's new movie out, Finding Jay, the second part, was did you yep. see it yet?
Yes.
I watched it. And
yes, I have.
Jay, I said, if you don't mind some suggestions, you know? And he's like, okay, I'm all ears. What? I said, bring two voice recorders and keep them running all the time. I said, Jay, we caught a whole Native American powwow on one of them and nothing on the other, okay? Because different manufacturers set it for different frequencies. And he was like, oh, my God, that's great. And I said, and number two, when you're filming in the dark and you hear a noise and you're talking into the camera, don't whisper. Just talk like you normally talk and then get back to what you were doing. Because when you whisper, it kind of, you kind of, because people are straining to hear what you're saying. So you can't listen to what you're hearing. He's like, oh, Al, thanks a lot, man. He goes, see, that's what being a ghost hunter does, you know? And I told him, I said, I got pictures of orbs all around me in one photo. Wow. I mean, I did a 360, wasn't there to the naked eye. I didn't see anything. But in those photos, there are faces in every single one of them. And in the digital voice recorder, there's a powwow going on around me. And in the other digital voice recorder is nothing going on. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. You know, we learned, and I'm the tech guy for the group for the most part. And after a couple experiences, I always have a recorder going from the minute I get out of that car to get my gear. I press record and I let it run. I switched to a body camera at one point. It just got a little bit too jiggly and it's kind of hard to, you know, you want to throw up watching it, but you got to have some kind of audio going or video going. I highly recommend body cameras because they're pretty damn good. They go for 72 hours.
Oh, okay.
So, and it'll catch
stuff. I have to wear one at work, so I don't really like those too much. I'm a correctional officer. I work at Rikers Island. Okay. So.
Yeah, well, I understand
put a couple of digital voice recorders on your shoulders, you know what I mean? And just remember that they're on. So try not to talk so much.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, when you go home and you go through all the audio, which is a nightmare, you know, you will be surprised on what you catch on one and what you, and you don't catch this, you know, because it always blows my mind, even though I know the microphones are set at different frequencies, their recorders are sitting right next to each other on a table and one is catching something and one is not catching anything at all, you know? And
yeah, that's amazing.
That simple change in frequency and, slight,
even the slightest
frequency. And, it's amazing. It's just amazing the stuff you catch. And, you know, and like I said, I've had some epiphanies last year and a half or so with the Bigfoot stuff. Not that I thought I knew everything there was in the Bigfoot world. You know, I'm far from an expert. I don't, you know, but I've had some epiphanies that just totally blew my mind. Just totally blew my mind. I'm like, wow, that thought never crossed my mind, you know, and I know a lot of people that are senior to me, and these guys, I pick their brains, but they don't give you anything unless you find it on your own. Once you find it on your own and you go back to them and you say, hey, this happened to me, this ever happened to you, they'll start laughing and say, okay, you've graduated to the stage now. Okay. And then,
welcome to the club.
You all about the stuff that happened to them. And it's like, dude, why didn't you tell me this like 6 years ago, you know? And they're like, no, you gotta get there on your own, you know?
Yeah. You gotta graduate. You gotta, you know, going out year after year, day after day is very helpful because it gives you, it's not credibility. It just gives you, it marks you up in points and eventually you move up a step and then another step. And the closer you get to, it sounds crazy and it sounds very hippie-ish, vibrating at a higher frequency, the more it's just going to be instantaneous, the more you're going to be contacted. And this is on any level. Yeah.
Let's talk about the Beyond the Realm radio show. You guys were both involved in that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, there was three of us, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, there was a new network coming out. I thought it would be a good idea. So I said, hey, we're going to do a show. I volunteer Al and everybody for things a lot. And, you know, at one point I thought, like, you know, I'm a comedian for the most part. I do, you know, very comical, but I wanted a female perspective, but I also wanted someone else in it. And I said, you know, no, this has to be Al, Cindy, and myself. That's what it has to be. Because it's a great perspective, because Al is a little old school, new school. I think out of the box, Cindy has that female perspective. So it's a great way to do it. And yeah. And what's funny was, no one gave us respect or credibility of, these guys are going to do a show. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. And our show, I produced it. Al was getting guests and Cindy was great. She was there appearing. She had some little health issues with her back and pain. But at one point in time, they kept screwing around with our show. They'll speed it forward, speed it up, or they'll put it on the wrong night or whatever. And I was getting pissed. Al was getting pissed big time. Cindy was kind of there, but, you know, she's almost doing a favor. She really didn't want to do the show.
You know, I was doing Brian a favor because I really didn't want to do the show. But yeah. I was doing guests and research. Yeah. Brian was doing all the technical stuff, producing and all that other stuff that goes along with it, and editing, yes.
Right.
And it was a new show. Editing. It was a new network out of the UK.
You know,
and no, I'm just saying it was out of the UK because I know a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention the name.
It was out of the UK, but we knocked it out of the box.
Satan.
We knocked it out of the box, and the show
was a
major success. And let's just say the people who ran the network had their own show, and we were blowing them out of the water.
And yeah, we beat them. And on top of that, this is what's great. One night, I get a call from Al, and Al's livid because they played us the wrong night. It was like a Thursday. We were supposed to go Wednesday or Thursday, and vice versa, and they did the reverse. And he's like, this is wrong. You know, he's getting really pissed. And I get it, because we're tired of being beaten up and things not working. And I looked at the numbers, and our show, when it was on, because they had live stats at that point, there was a podcasting site that would give you live stats. We were beating Win with 10-10 wins and NBC News Radio at the same time. And I'm trying to calm Al down, and I'm like, you know, Al, but we're beating these guys, you know, which means we were literally number one for a long while until there was, I forgot what the podcast, the show was that comes on. Like, I don't know if it was a Rush Limbaugh or whatever. And they just, you know, they'll blow the doors off everybody. But I was very proud of it. We got a lot of accolades
time,
from
energy,
it.
Energy and effort into the show.
It was great.
We went into it as professionals. And we knocked it out of the box. And the reason why it was so successful is because of all the hard work and all the energy we put into it. That's what pissed me off That's what made me lose my mind. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Sure.
Brian's in the Bahamas, and I told the owner of the station to kiss my ear. Yeah, well, yeah, I told him to go after himself, but and then, well, he wasn't the owner of the station. He was the program director. He was the one screwing us around, and then the owner got involved. And Brian said, "Oh, you know, Brian." I told Brian, and Brian talked to the owner, and the owner talked to me, and she was okay. She was like, "I want you guys to come back. You guys are really, really good." Yada yada yada. And I was like, "No, I'm not coming back just to have this asshole, this program director, screw our shit up." I mean, he was screwing us over left and right because he was so jealous that we were blowing his show out of the water. That you know, it was just I can't put all that time, effort, and energy. And it was really pissing me off because I'm a boots on the ground kind of guy. I like to be out investigating. That's where I'm happiest, not behind a mic. And I was focusing all our time on the show. I wasn't getting out anymore, you know? And then to have somebody pull the rug out from under you like that, just, I'm sorry. I'm a grease ball from the city. I got a bad temper. I lost my mind. And, you know,
and you know what? There was, because of the negativity by the network, it started breeding into us as the family. And we just stopped. We stopped. And we were fine with stopping. We needed to cool our jets because it was overtaking us. And because we were so, I mean, we were really successful with it. And had we kept going, there's no doubt in my mind we would have had one of the top rated podcasts. Because we were really, it was perfectly balanced. It's what people wanted to hear and they loved it, especially with StreamYard. But you know what? Wow. We would have lost each other as friends and family and brothers and sisters. So we just stopped.
Had all the networks, even bigger networks here in the States reaching out to us saying, come to our network, you know? And we were faithful to them because they were the ones who gave us our first opportunity. You know, we could have just bailed on them, you know?
Sure.
So, you know, it was hard to get Cindy to commit to a specific time because of her doctor's appointments or some what other issues. I have family. Al has family. I mean, we, you know what? And no offense, but we weren't getting paid to do it. So I'm not going to really jump through hoops for somebody to get something done if I'm not going to make something on a product. And they were making money on the product.
Absolutely.
So I started helping out somebody else because he lost his co-host. And I started doing a show with him. He picked me as his co-host. So I started doing that. But then he, you know, the problem with podcasting,
he needed
once you get some
success, because he couldn't do it. Yeah. That's what he
couldn't do it. And you know, and there are people, they get to a certain point where they think they're better than everybody. And they got to realize pretty quick that they're not. And I'm getting a phone call from somebody when they shouldn't be calling me.
It's just
ridiculous. Sorry about that. But of course,
all good.
I mean, this
it's
happens all the time. But you know what? Sure. I'm proud of it. I still do a radio show. I do. I'm Inside the Babylon Universe with Ron Murphy. I always drag Al into a couple other interviews because we do a Bronxville Paranormal Society conjunction with New York State UFO Project, New York State Sasquatch Organization, and now New York State Dogman Project. And we just discuss, you know, whatever, you know, could be something that's happening currently or what we're doing or we're working on. And people love it because we're just fun. It's serious, but it's fun. And then I do my own show, Nobo Boomy.
Right.
All of this is, you know, if you look Inside the Goblin Universe, you'll find all of it. So just go Siri or Alexa, play Inside the Goblin Universe, you'll get to the podcast. We've had some good people on there, and even I drag him. I always volunteer Al to get on and help me co-host an interview, you know. But what's great about Al is like, you know, come on as a co-host. And this is with other people. Other people have asked Al on as well as me to be co-host. And Al's very, unless he lets you do your show and he sits back a bit too much. And I told him, I said, dude, when we're doing this, we're equals here. Whenever you want to ask questions, don't say excuse me, just jump in or whatever. But that's the polite side of Al right there. You know, he doesn't, that's not how he operates, you know.
So is there like a, I mean, this question is for both of you guys. Is there like a bucket list place or something that you would, that you've been like dying to either investigate or a cryptid that you've been wanting to see or anything like that?
I've got a lot of places. Me and Machu Picchu, I want to go to Easter Island. I want to go to the top of the great, I want to go to the pyramids. I mean, there's plenty of places I want to investigate based off of not only just UFOs or dogmen or aliens. There are other parts of this that actually work together in concert. Is there anything I want to see? I'll tell you what I would like. There are people who talk about mind speak, which drives Al nuts. It's telepathy. Mental telepathy, where creatures can talk to you. And people have said that they've had experience with a Sasquatch, Bigfoot talking to them, even dogmen. And I would like to have a 15-minute or more conversation with one of these cryptids. Just like, oh my God, you know, like, hi, you know, do you come out this size? You know, how big are you when you're born? You know, just to literally have a conversation with us, if it's possible. I'm not saying
it is or isn't. As far as I'm concerned, I just want to go back to my home planet. That's it. I'm tired of this place, man.
Yeah.
Bring me back home.
And it's a six pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon and a Gibson guitar. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of different things that's out there. It depends, you know. It's one thing when you have missing time, like we investigate it, and I've had only two that I remember, one of which is recently. It's another thing when you're getting the missing time, and so is your wife and two kids. That bothers me because, look, take me while you're up there, suck out a little bit in the middle, you know, sculpt the body. But don't touch my kids. Don't take, you know. I mean, not that I want them to take my wife either, but, you know, she can, you know, she can kind of handle herself. But my children are off limits. And I think all of our children are off limits. It's like, look, do whatever you're going to do. Just leave the kids and leave them out of it. But you have no control over that.
What the hell are they still looking for anyway? What the hell are they still looking for? I mean, to be honest with you, all you would need is a male adult, a female adult. You know, how many people are you gonna experiment on? You know, like it's
there's a very long answer to this that would take you an entire show. I do this all the time.
Okay.
I'm gonna quickly sum it up. There's no Galactic Federation where all these different aliens or species are together trying to figure out what to do with Earth. Not happening. Each individual species that comes here from out of the planet, they're coming here from their own planet where they have pretty much obliterated their genetic code, and they're going extinct. They are using us specifically for hybrid creation and continuing their race. Some of the aliens are very aggressive and nasty. Some of them aren't. It's usually black or white, and they basically are standoffish with each other outside the planet as well as within. There are some of these creatures that have been here previously. They've been on Earth and now they've gone underground. There are also interdimensionals. It's they need this to continue their race, and that's what they're doing. And if you've ever taken a bio class and you have person A and B have a child, and then person A and C have a child, and person A and B, and then you start mixing it off, eventually you will take the species and get it, like you'll create something that's 99% human and 1% alien versus something that's 99% alien and 1% human. And eventually you'll thin it out so that you get your species back. And now you're creating a species. You're continuing your genetic code throughout whatever. That's why they're doing what they're doing. Why? They don't help each one. Like, you know, if you have a bad knee, they should fix it. I'm got to be honest. You're gonna kidnap me in the middle of the night, take my sperm and do stupid experiments on me or whatever. You know what? You know, thin me out a little bit. You know, give me, you know, better hairline. You know, I mean, just do something. You know, Dad, you had green eyes before. Yeah, I know, but the aliens picked me up and now their eyes blue. I mean, something different. And, you know, it's not about world peace. It really isn't. And that's the problem with that whole field.
I mean, I had a guest on a while back. I talked to you about Steve Neal. Steve Neal had said that his experiences, they've all been very, you know, docile and very, you know, like, telling him everything's going to be okay. And, you know, we're not here to harm you. We're not here to harm anybody, this and that. And he always felt a calm feeling about it. But I had this other kid that was on that said that, no, he goes, they're very aggressive. He said that they're trying to live inside people's brains. I you know, like basically, like, he's like, they can't control us. He goes, but they could live through us. He goes, so if you're having sex, they could feel you having sex. Like, they could feel, or if you're tasting a food, they could taste the food. They could live inside of you and feel what you're feeling, you know?
Because they tap into your consciousness. That's how it works. But you know what? They have an agenda too. And, you know, we put too much human type of flavor on everything. Oh, they should be like this. You know what? It's black and white. And what this one person is thinking is very aggressive for these entities. It's not aggressive. They need to get something done and they're doing it. And you're not used to that. You're used to please and thank you. Excuse me, ma'am. No, they're going to go there, shove the rod up your ass, take your sperm, inject it. And they don't give a crap if it's, well, hey, what are you doing? You know, they don't care. They're in there for a reason. And again, yeah, you always have a good, you know, it's a yin yang. You have good with a lot of good, a little bad, with a lot of bad, a little good. So it's a tough call. But I'm going to have to jet in a minute because my little alien is calling. And so.
Sure. All right. So just real quick then, Brian, what do you have coming up, you know, individually or collectively? What do you guys got going on?
We still are doing our own little investigations here and there. I'm just getting used to Florida, but I'm going to be hooking up with a great Bigfoot researcher who has got a Class A sighting location that he wants me to go and take part in. I just have to get snake waders and whatever else you can kill alligators and boa constrictors with. But eventually, once I get settled in here, I will be bringing my show back, which is Nobody But Me, Nobo Boomy, on Inside the Goblin Universe. That's what we do it under. And we do, it's not just paranormal. I do music. I do art. Actually, Al's going to be on another show we're going to do about music, tone and guitar. And we'll sneak something paranormal in there. Because there's always something mystical in relationship to everything we do. But it should be fun.
Yeah, and I got a bunch of stuff coming up. I got one. I'm doing an investigation with Zaphis in November. I got something coming up, I think, with Ron Iacovetti in October. I got another thing coming up in October, another investigation. I'm not really sure where that one's going to be yet. We're working at two locations. What else? I got the library thing coming up in November. I got a Bigfoot thing coming up too in November, an expedition. But Joe, you should reach out to me on Facebook and Messenger, so I can keep you in the loop if you're interested in coming out with us to any of these investigations, or, you know, whatever. If you ever need to just pick my brain or Brian's brain, you know what I mean? Don't hesitate to contact us. You know, we're pretty easy people to talk to and stuff like that, you know?
Just if anybody needed to get in touch with you for anything as far as investigation or anything like that, how could they do that?
I mean, we have the Bronxville Paranormal Study Hotline, which I don't know the number offhand. We also have the New York State UFO Project Hotline, where it can be reached 24/7. But the best way to get to us is through like Facebook Messenger. Just, you know, contact us in one of our groups there or individually. We're more than happy to answer these questions or requests. And we will put you, if we can't do it, we will put you to the right persons who can. And a lot of them don't charge. Some of them do charge, but they will take care of whatever situation you have. And that's pretty much close.
Excellent. All right. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show, guys. And yeah, I'm definitely going to take you up on that because, like I said, I've never been on an actual investigation for anything before. Just, you know, when I was younger, you know, going out to all the crazy spots in Staten Island, you know. But yeah, definitely thank you guys again for being on the show and let you know when it's going to be on.
Okay. Very cool.
Thank you.
All right. Good night. Have a good night, guys.
Have a good one, Joe.
Ciao.
You too.
Bye-bye.
So that's going to do it for me, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking around and checking out the whole interview. Thank you to Al Santariga and Brian Bowden, as well as Edgegrave Dave for his horrible review, and Chris Whitehouse of the Whitehouse Investigation Team. Also, remember, like I said, please go out and buy his book, Into the Darkness. It's awesome. And yeah, you can find it on Amazon. And check out the show notes for all the links to everything of today's show. On the next episode of the Warp Reality Podcast, we're back to our regularly scheduled format. Edgegrave Dave will be reviewing the newest Halloween movie, Halloween Ends. Chris Whitehouse will be talking about demons, as well as our regular segments, Haunted eBay and I Read It on Reddit, and Tiny Terrifying Tales. So please stay tuned for that, and I hope to see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Warp Reality Podcast, and thank you to all my guests and contributors that help make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warprealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or warprealitypodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.